All right, everyone, here is this previous Sunday's broadcast of my conversation with Kent Annan, who talked about the Christian response, or what should be the Christian response, to immigrants and refugees.
Whoa. Open up our blinded eyes to see, and drive us to our knees.
Welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., where I am truly delighted to have you joining with us for another edition of Spiritual Perspectives. The perspective we're going to focus on today is how we're responding to our refugees and to the world's immigrants. And here to help us with that discussion, to help us think through this and feel through this, is Mr. Kent Annan, who has written a book entitled You Welcomed Me, Loving Refugees and Immigrants Because God First Loved Us. Kent, hello, sir, and how are you doing?
Hi, Carl. It's great to be with you. Thank you.
I tell you what, it is good to be with you. You are really addressing an issue that is touching so many hearts, so many minds, so many emotions in one way or another across this country. And I want to thank you for that, let you know that I deeply appreciate you for having cared so much about this topic that you not only thought about it, but you've written about it. I'd like to ask you, if you could, Kent, to give us a little bit more of an idea of who Kent is, you know, what you've been involved with in your past, you know, what led you to, for one thing, decide that you would follow the way of Christ Jesus, and how that has led you to some of your academic pursuits, as well as some of your ministry pursuits.
Yes, I think, like, not for everyone, but for many of us, I grew up in a Christian home that shaped me, and I'm so grateful for, and a church community that formed me, and to think about ways from the perspective of Jesus and wanting to welcome everyone into the presence of Jesus, and our ability to be loving and our ability to sin and knowing that vulnerability. And so this is how I came into a relationship with Christ, and I'm so grateful for that. And then after I graduated from college, my very first work was with the refugee ministry, and so that's kind of what led, in a way, if I look back 25 years, led to writing this book. And I lived in Europe and worked with refugees who were coming from all over the world to Europe at that point for a couple of years. And then I came back from that work and thought, oh, I need more preparation and training and to be able to think theologically and know practically how to help. So I went to seminary for 3 years. And after that, I still was drawn to this work with ministry. And I think it was the day after I graduated from seminary, I got on a plane and went over and worked with for 6 months with refugees in Albania. There was a war happening in Kosovo right nearby at that point, and so I was in Albania and then in Kosovo working with refugees. Again, this experience and relationships and seeing people who had lost everything that kind of shaped who I was and how I understood God and how I wanted to live my life. Moved back to New Jersey because I, mostly because I had fallen in love with a woman who was there.
Good
reason. I'd been going to graduate school with her, very good reason. And, it was a good decision to make. And so I came back and my wife and I got married. And then 2 years later, still drawn to this sort of work of wanting to learn and help people in hard parts of the world, my wife and I moved to Haiti. So we got on a plane and within 24 hours, we were living down in Haiti with a subsistence farming family out in the countryside with no running water, no electricity, and a tin roof over our heads. And we didn't speak any Creole, and they didn't speak any English. And we lived with them for 7 months and learned to speak the language and farm and go to the market and all that. And it was really, again, incredible experience to get to be shaped by people. And they're a really faithful, faithful family who still look up to, especially the grandfather. We'd, you know, wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. We're in this new place that was unsettling just because it was so different for us. But we'd hear him often up at 5 o'clock in the morning as our language got better. And we could hear he was praying for the whole family, for all his grandchildren, praying for us. This man, Per, who was illiterate and not educated by many standards of the world, but was a beautifully faithful man who knew Jesus well and would pray every morning for us. And so we lived in Haiti for 2.5 years, and I started a nonprofit with a colleague working on education with churches and schools in Haiti, and did that for much of the last 15 years. It was an incredible privilege to live there for 2.5 and then go back and forth and start this nonprofit that worked there. And I wrote 4 books along the way, thinking about how we do this work of justice and serving others well and faithfully. It's an incredible privilege. And then we were living in Florida during that time and have 2 children who are now 13 and 9. And then made a big change from Florida up to Chicago. And my family and I just moved up to Chicago this past year, where I am to take a position at Wheaton College, which is just in the suburbs of Chicago Christian College. And they just launched a Master of Arts in Humanitarian and Disaster Leadership. So it's really for people who want to go into the work of working with refugees, working in disaster relief, working in international development, working with people who are in the area of trafficking, human trafficking. And so it's an incredible privilege to work now with people who are wanting to serve others, and I didn't want to give up the chance to work with this next generation of talented people coming up to serve their vulnerable neighbors well. And so that is my work now. I'm still staying involved in Haiti a little bit, but really most of my work is with Wheaton College at this new master's degree program, and wanting to help people who are going into this work of serving refugees and others who are vulnerable in our country and around the world after disaster or for other reasons. And so this has been a real privilege that led to my writing this most recent book, You Welcome Me, Loving Refugees and Immigrants, because God first loved us. So there's just a quick, my quick story with lots of gratitude and grace along the way to God and to many, many people.
I tell you what, I can imagine that has been a rich, rich journey, a very rich experience for you. You mentioned that you've been in different parts of the country, you've been in different parts of the world. You have spent quite a bit of time with people of various cultures as a result. And that leads me to my question I'd like to ask you about working with refugees, with immigrants, particularly when you are going to their homes, you're going to their countries. You mentioned that one of the things that happened while you were in Haiti is that since you did not know the language before you got there, you learned Creole after you got there. Did you find it to be a critical part of your connecting with the Haitians to have learned their language as opposed to having had them learn to speak English?
Yes, definitely. And that's, you know, when I was in Albania and Kosovo, with the nature of the work, I didn't have a chance. You know, I took some language lessons in Albania, and I found it hard, and it was, we were working really long hours to do the relief work and with refugees, so I regretted not doing some. But I found even there, if I had, you know, the fact that I had learned a few phrases and can do some basics, I think people appreciated the effort. And then in Haiti, we're really a privilege to really spend time working on learning Creole and really enjoyed it. And it was a way that we connected with people. And it does seem like people were grateful we'd made the effort, and it made such a difference in being able to communicate with people at all different walks of life, and to listen and be shaped by them so that hopefully we're serving them better. So you know, you can kind of understand when some people go into some circumstances where that's not possible, but I think whenever it's possible, and whether it's just a few phrases, if say you're visiting for a week, I think people appreciate it. If you learn a few phrases, just shows respect for their culture and for their language, just shows a attention and concern for them, and definitely for a longer term, I think it's ideal to learn the language if it's at all possible.
I love that. That makes so much sense. And so you've been at these various places. Of course, you were helping them. When we think about refugees and immigrants from the perspective of where we are physically, geographically, and when I say we, Americans, we often think about other people groups who are traveling from their homeland to either other homelands, maybe nearby, or maybe even to our land, to America itself. How do you find, Kent, that the general disposition of Americans seems to be when it comes to how we respond to refugee slash immigrant situations, crises?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think in the past, Americans, and typically across church backgrounds, political backgrounds, have been really welcoming to refugees, you know, where their case is a little bit more clear-cut, that they're escaping persecution. It's persecution or threat of persecution for political reasons or religious reasons or because of a people group they're in or because of violent conflict. And so I think people have, in the past, had a lot of consensus around that. Politically, that's shifted somewhat in the last 5 years, where, you know, some more people are sort of become, I think, because of the political rhetoric, even some people being against welcoming refugees, you know, which I think is disturbing. So there's a group of them, and so I think that's a reality in our country right now, though people would generally be a little bit more open to receiving refugees. With immigrants, you know, it's a bigger topic. It's a bigger number of people who are coming here for work. Some are escaping distress, you know, and threatening conditions. Others, it's economic, because they can't provide for their families. And so I think it's interesting, because in some ways the rhetoric of our country, at least in my lifetime, feels as negative as it's ever been against immigrants. On the other side, and I think that's a lot of become sort of on the more politically conservative and even religiously conservative, and in the white church, white evangelical conservative church, but it's by no means everyone, but that's been one of the things that polls have shown. So we've seen some shift of being a little bit less welcoming to refugees, a little bit less welcoming on the immigrant side. On the other hand, some of the national polls actually show the U.S. is wanting to be welcoming and being more positive about immigration and immigrants than ever before. And a lot of the data shows that communities where immigrants come, sort of immigrant communities, neighborhoods, are safer than those that don't have any immigrants at all, which is encouraging. I think there's been a lot of studies on the positive economic contributions that immigrants and refugees make. So I think your question's a great one. I think it's really important, and it's a bit complex because there are different indicators that show positive and negative responses. But I think when we're at our best, we can be very welcoming while also being wise, not naive, thinking, okay, we should ignore security issues or economic issues, but I think if we're wise about those, we can follow some of our best instincts as a country. To be welcoming. And so many people are there, but there's definitely a sort of an inner debate in our country, isn't there, like right now, on sort of the how many people to receive, how positive their contributions are. And so that's definitely, I think, what I wanted to speak into with this book, especially for Christians, to make sure we're remembering, well, I think the spirit of Jesus is a spirit of welcoming and wanting to be welcoming of people who are in distress, especially, and who can't provide for their families, who are needing to escape some kind of threat or can't stay safely in their homes, and people have left everything behind. I think it's an incredible opportunity as a country and as communities, when we can, to receive them generously, and also to think about how we can do that wisely.
I think I really like that approach about making sure that love and wisdom are both part of the equation when it comes to how we respond to the immigrant slash refugee situation. That said, one of the things that you do in your book that I think is helpful is you help make a distinction between immigrant and refugee. I was wondering if you could share with us what that distinction is And then if you could go from there to help us really begin to let this be real to us, more than just a concept, more than just a principle. Make it real to us by sharing with us some of the examples of people who you have actually spent time with who were immigrants. And after you will have shared with us the distinction between immigrants and refugees, some of the people you spent time with who were refugees.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. I think it's a great question. So the main difference between immigrants and refugees is really immigrants would be the big category, you know, of people who come for us who are in America right now and are American. So people who have come to live in our country from other places. And so all of them would be immigrants. And then a subcategory, like one of the categories within those immigrants, would be the category of refugees. And those are people who have come to our country specifically because they are under threat in their own countries. And there are five different categories, but if they're under threat for religious reasons, for political reasons, because people group that they're in because of political conflict, it's like, you know, almost literally we can think of refugees as immigrants whose lives are in danger if they stayed where they were. So they've left everything behind to be here. Now, the broader category of immigrants would be, okay, that's, some of them are refugees. Others, maybe they just see an opportunity. They come for education or for a job. Best case scenario, maybe they have lots of opportunity in their, other, in their own country, but they have even more here in our country. We say, oh, yeah, they can help our country, so we'll let them in. And then in the middle between those categories, I think where a lot of people, and I think where a lot of the debate ends up being, would be the category of immigrants who aren't, their lives aren't under threat necessarily, but they, let's say their country is in turmoil and they have a real hard time providing for their family. And so we wouldn't say they're not refugees under international definitions, but, you know, say like you or I, like if you're a father or a mother and can't provide for children economically, and then there would be some kind of a job, or some people offering opportunities in the U.S. to work to provide, where you could make enough money to provide for your family, then there'll be people who'd be coming for economic opportunities in the U.S. So there are a few different categories of immigrants. And, you know, one side would be refugees. Other side would be people just kind of coming because they have great opportunities here in the middle. And it'd be a range of people who are coming because it's an opportunity, and others who are coming because they're under pretty dire threat, and their circumstances, they wouldn't officially be refugees, but it would be getting pretty close to that because they're only leaving because they're making a huge decision and sacrifice to leave everything behind, jobs and families and home and language, all that behind, because it's so hard to provide or to survive where they are. So,
you know what, Kent, you mentioned that. They're leaving everything behind. And I know that sometimes people hear that said, but it's so easy for us if we're fairly comfortable where we are and don't have to put ourselves in their shoes. I think, though, about some of the Americans who have lived in America. And I'm thinking, for example, about my mother. I'm thinking about other people who I've heard this story told about. They simply wanted to move for one reason or another, and not necessarily to another country. They wanted to remain in the same city that they were in, but they wanted to move into another house. And because they had grown so accustomed to the neighborhood that they had lived in for 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, they preferred to be in a neighborhood close to the one that they were already in, if not the same neighborhood. They didn't even want to go across the city because they were so accustomed to where they were. And the thought of making that major transition to another part of the city was so stressful for them that they decided, no, I want to try to stay in the same neighborhood. I'm just thinking they're making a move of choice and they're uncomfortable about moving to a different part of the city. How much more devastating, stressful is it for people, for families, entire families, picking up and leaving their land out of necessity? Our guest is Kent Annan. He's going to help to bring this home for us even more as we continue with this discussion. His book is entitled, You Welcomed Me, Loving Refugees and Immigrants Because God First Loved Us.